Good morning. First case of the morning will be Marshall Jerez versus United States. Ms. Ball.
May it please the court. This appeal tests the edge of Duesenberry versus United States. In that case, the United States Supreme Court held that when the federal government seeks to give forfeiture to a federal prisoner, it must use means that are reasonably calculated under all the circumstances to apprise that prisoner of an action affecting his property rights. In Duesenberry, the court really zeroed in on the mail procedures in place at the federal correctional institution at issue there. And the court held that those specific mail procedures did satisfy the due process clause. So the Court of Appeals task here is really straightforward. The court must look and examine the mail procedures in place at the Dane County Jail, which is where Mr. Jerez was being held, and determine whether or not those measure up to the standards that were approved in Duesenberry. So I'd like to talk about two points today very briefly. The first one is the differences between those two mail delivery systems, and the second is the constitutional significance of those differences. With respect to the differences themselves, in Duesenberry, the federal government sent notice of forfeiture via certified mail to a prisoner, and the prison officials went to the post office where they signed a certified return receipt. That was the first step in the mail delivery process there. Then the letter was taken back to the prison where it was entered into a logbook in the prison's mail room. That was the second step. Then the letter was signed for by a member of the inmate's unit team who was acknowledging receipt of that letter and for delivery to the prisoner. That inmate unit team member signed for it. So that was the third step in the Duesenberry mail delivery system. Now let's consider what happened.
Is that the last step?
Yes, that was the last step.
So they didn't have any mechanism for the prisoner himself signing.
That is correct. And the case law on the due process clause in this area, Your Honor, does not require actual notice. If the prisoner had signed for it himself, that would have constituted actual notice.
So it comes down to the, which I guess you're saying is the deeper it goes into this funnel, that the more likely it is he received it as opposed to just what one encounter with the prison is acknowledged?
The more steps there are between the point where someone signs the certified return receipt and the point where the letter is delivered to the prisoner, the more opportunity there is for error. That's one aspect of it. But the second aspect of the problem here is the number of steps that are undocumented. In Duesenberry, there were three steps. Every single one was documented. In Mr. Cherez's case, there were four steps. The first one was documented, and we don't know what happened after that.
Well, would I be wrong if I thought that Duesenberry doesn't rely on the internal prison procedures and finding that notice was sufficient?
I think that Duesenberry does examine and find the internal procedures significant, specifically the step where the inmate unit team member signs the logbook in the mail room, the prison mail room, to remove the letter and give it to the prisoner.
So is actual notice required?
No, actual notice is not required. But I believe actual notice in this circumstance would be, well, it would be what federal prisoners receive now in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, which is where they sign a logbook saying, I've received this certified letter, this notice of forfeiture.
What's the evidence that the prison delivery system is flawed here?
Well, the primary piece of evidence is the fact that Mr. Cherez contends he did not get notice. Beyond that, the only facts that are in the record here are the facts supplied in the affidavit submitted by the government. And those are affidavits which describe what the prison mail delivery system is. Just like the prison official in Duesenberry described what the prison mail system was and the procedures. And then the court's task is to ask, well, are the chances good enough under the system that the notice is actually going to reach the prisoner, or are they poor? Or not good enough for the due process clause, I guess is a better way of saying it. And I think a way of looking at the problem here is how many steps removed are we from actual notice, right? Actual notice isn't required, but the further you get away from it, the more likely you are to have a due process problem. So in the Duesenberry case, we're one step removed from actual notice because the person who signs the logbook turns and delivers it to the prisoner. In Mr. Cherez's case, we're at least three steps removed from actual notice, and not one of those three steps is documented. The only way to really determine the reliability of the system in the mail delivery system in Mr. Cherez's case would be if there were documentation. That's how we know that the letter is moving through the system from one point to the next. And I think it's important to remember here, this isn't just a matter of someone handing a letter to someone else who hands it to someone else. It's actually getting dumped in bins where it's resorted, put in another bin, resorted, the next day someone comes and picks it up and takes it to a different building even, not the building where the Dane County Support Services Division is, but the building where the Dane County Jail is.
We're talking about a certain amount of money, right?
Yes, it's about $1,400.
And where did they get the money from? His wife's purse or something?
They searched his trailer home, Mr. Cherez's trailer home, and I seized the contents of her purse, and I believe that's where the money was.
Now, did she also get a notice of this?
A notice was sent to her by certified mail.
And she signed for that?
Yes, she did. That's in the record.
Now, would she have an opportunity or a right to challenge this or to try to recover the money?
She would, Your Honor. If she was given the notice, that she would have an opportunity to do that. I would just like to urge the court that the line that we're urging the court to draw here between the Duesenberry case and Mr. Cherez's case really doesn't force the government to take heroic measures in order to give notice to a prisoner of a forfeiture proceeding. I think that the Third Circuit in that one Toshiba television case really put it well when they said, when the federal government is trying to give a notice of forfeiture, its ability to do so is really at a zenith when the property owner is a prisoner, because the federal government knows precisely where the prisoner is, and the government knows that the prisoner is going to be there when the notice lands at the institution, at the location where the prisoner is being held. So we're not asking the government to take heroic measures here. We're asking them to satisfy the due process clause. And when you really think about it, all the government's affidavits in this case really establish is that they sent notice of forfeiture via certified mail to Mr. Cherez, and that notice of forfeiture landed in the hands of the government. They don't prove that what happened after that was a system that was reasonably certain to reach the individual, the property owner, in this case, Mr. Cherez.
Would Mr. Cherez have to sign for the letter, in your view?
It is not required under Duesenberry, Your Honor. Mr. Cherez requested the court reverse the district court's decision and declare the government's forfeiture void. Thank you.
Thank you. Jill?
Good morning. My name is Stephen Elke. I was counsel below in the underlying criminal case, and through the plea, Elizabeth Altman from our office wrote the brief in this case. To take up a question posed here, I disagree, the government disagrees that Duesenberry focused in on the procedures at issue at the correctional institution in that case. The legal question and the only question before the court in Duesenberry was whether actual notice was going to be required when an inmate was in custody and there was a forfeiture proceeding, or whether constructive notice would be sufficient, and if so, what nature of constructive notice would be sufficient. As the court is well aware, the Duesenberry case was a 5-4 split, so there was disagreement among the circuits. But Duesenberry held that actual notice is not required in a forfeiture proceeding, even when the person who is the subject of the forfeiture is within the control, if you will, of the government. What the court held was that actual notice is not required, number one, and number two, that sending mail by certified mail to the known location of the inmate was sufficient to satisfy due process requirements. in Duesenberry, the court specifically rejected the notion that because a better system may be devised, the prior one was flawed. And so I would suggest that in this case, the court has an opportunity to establish a bright line rule, if you will, that sending a mail, certified mail, to the institution where the inmate is and to the person's residence in case someone else may claim an interest, and also by mailing it. And here we did all three. Notice was sent to the house where Mr. Chara's previously lived, or the trailer home. Notice was sent to the Dane County Jail, where he was being housed as a federal inmate, but at the Dane County Jail, and it was also published in the Wall Street Journal for 3 weeks. The petitioner, or Mr. Chara, is confusing the documentation of the where the letter ended up with due process requirements, and Duesenberry does not require that. What will happen if the court, in this case, says, well, the Dane County Jail rules the way they distributed mail was sufficient, is that this court will be reviewing the mail delivery systems for virtually every county jail within its circuit.
More likely, you'd be reviewing them.
We'd be reviewing
them. The prosecutors would be reviewing them.
We would be defending those in the Western District and our counterparts throughout the circuit, yes, Your Honor. And that is not what Duesenberry requires. Actual notice is not required. And the federal court should not be in the position of reviewing those. The fact that there may be two logbooks or signed or three logbooks signed is irrelevant. In a worst-case scenario, hypothetically, you could have an inmate, a guard, who for some reason decides he's going to start destroying all the mail. I'm not suggesting any of them do that, but he might sign or she might sign that the mail was received and then be throwing it away. That doesn't mean anything. And so it's just another way of saying that the court should not be in the business of reviewing these mail delivery systems.
When it's out of the hands of the post office, it is certified when it gets to the prison. That's where you think the bright line should be. It's
That's
delivered at the institution. Now, what goes on internally is beyond the mailing notice.
Correct. I suggest to the court that what happens at a particular jail is beyond what is required under Duesenberry for due process requirements. And I would believe that the jails certainly have a duty, if it's not a fiduciary duty, they certainly have a duty to deliver the mail to the inmates that are in their jail. If, in my hypothetical, there was some rogue jailer who was throwing mail away, I suppose there might be a Section 1983 claim against them if it could be shown, and that would be the remedy if the court has any concerns about what remedy there might be for an inmate in such a situation. So yes, Your Honor, I would suggest that the bright line rule should be when the inmate is known where they are, they send certified mail there, that's it, and the court should not be in the business of reviewing. Because in this case, you had a federal prosecution and then also an administrative forfeiture. It was not part of the indictment. But as the court well knows, you could have a situation in which there's a state prosecution and then an administrative forfeiture through the federal DEA agents. The United States Attorney's Office might not even be involved. So you could have an inmate in a county jail in Indiana or in Wisconsin. And that's what I was getting to before. This court would be in the position then of reviewing all of these county jail procedures, and they probably do vary from county to county. You have big counties, small counties, in between counties with different resources, and that should not be the rule. That should not be what due process is required under Duesenberry.
I take it that your bottom line is that absent some evidence that the prison delivery system is flawed, we should not be concluding that a mailing isn't reasonably calculated to apprise a prisoner of what has happened.
Exactly correct. And there's no doubt that in the Duesenberry decision, the court explains and goes through what the procedure was at the FCI institution in that case. And I don't mean to say there was an incidental part of the decision, but I think a close reading of Duesenberry does establish that it is the certified mailing by the DEA which satisfied the due process. And if you think about it, that makes sense. Once the DEA, which is trying to forfeit it, sends it certified mail, it's out of their hands at that point. So in terms of due process or fairness, what DEA could do, there's nothing more they can do. And like I said,
you emphasize the other method. You sent it to his last known address, I guess, or his home.
Correct.
Or something. Sent one to his wife, which curiously, it seems to be at least she's the last one to have the money, took it from her purse apparently.
I believe so. There was a search warrant executed, if I recall. I would have to double check.
Well, it doesn't matter, but she got a notice as well, I guess.
The people that were at the place, at the residence, received notice.
So you would think there would be other people that knew it, but then you also said it's published in the Wall Street Journal. I think that's kind of an expensive medium, and I'm sure they don't deliver a lot of those to the prison.
Only to Danbury.
I think there, not conceding it, there might be an interesting argument about where they didn't know where the person was, if that would be, although it is under the regulation.
Right, any publication that Wall Street Journal as opposed to the local, whatever.
But here we knew where he was, DEA knew where he was until they sent the mail. So in a sense, the publication is frosting on the cake, if you will.
Except I think all you're saying is that what is essential is the mailing and to his where he is.
Correct, Your Honor. In terms of remedy, if the court determines that there was a due process violation here, the United States would argue that or suggest that Mr. Chara should not be put in a better position than he would have been if he had received notice. So in the event the court does think there was a due process violation, it should simply go back and the forfeiture proceeding should then go forward and each side would have its available remedies and burdens of proof and so on.
How would you be put in a better position? What do you mean?
Well, if the court simply reversed and said the government loses and he gets his $1,400 right back, he would be in a better position than if he had had to go through the process. Unless there are any other questions, I conclude my remarks.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Claw?
Just a few quick points, Your Honor. The first one is, does the Duesenberry case really focus in on the mail delivery system, or does it only require that there be certified mail? If you look at the precise holding of the Duesenberry case, the second to the last sentence, and it's 534 U.S. at 173, the court says, we think the FBI's use of the system described in detail above was reasonably calculated under all the circumstances to apprise the petitioner of the action. And the system described in detail above included an analysis of the procedures in place at FBI Milan. So I think the procedures in place there are critical to the court's decision. Secondly, Judge Roedner, you raised a point about, well, what evidence is there that the system is flawed? There isn't a lot of evidence in this case because there were no logbooks. Had a logbook been required, then Mr. Chavez would have been in a position to say, the system didn't work in my case. And I think that's where we have to talk about the unique situation of the prisoner. He has no way to prove what the mail distribution system is within the prison, and he has no way to prove that it's not reliable or that it didn't work in his case. That's why the prison mail delivery system is important here.
But you know what you just quoted, though, you said we think that the FBI's use of the system described in detail above. The FBI has no, other than using the system of getting it to the prison with certified mail, it has no further control. So I think when you talk about the FBI's use, you're in effect saying the FBI has to check ahead to see what's going to happen internally in each prison before it can send certified mail.
In a sense, that's true, Your Honor, because what the Due Process Clause requires is if you're providing less than actual notice, and that's what Duesenberry holds in Toshiba 1 and some of the other cases. If it's less than actual notice, then the government, in this case it's the FBI, have to assure that there are procedures in place that are reasonably calculated to deliver the notice. And there would be absolutely no reason for the Duesenberry court to go in detail to describing all of the procedures that were in place at Milan, Michigan, if they weren't essential to its decision.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Your Honor.
You were appointed, weren't you, ma'am?
Yes, Your Honor.
Just fine a job. Thank you.
Thanks very much.